you know, even in these really difficult moments, the opportunity to find a way to pivot or to create something new out of a challenge or a failure is an important perspective to keep in mind.
This is Can Do, Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, a podcast that explores why Montana leads the nation in entrepreneurship and business startups. I'm Arnie Sherman. It's mid-April 2020, and the macroeconomic shockwaves from the COVID-19 pandemic have disrupted businesses in Montana and around the world. Since March 14th, more than 22 million Americans have filed for unemployment benefits. At the same time, entire industries are facing uncertain futures, with certain sectors requiring massive government assistance. Today on Can Do Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, we're catching up with previous guests. What challenges do Montana entrepreneurs face in this current crisis? And how are they pivoting their strategies to respond to the rapidly shifting business ecosystem? My guests today are John and Courtney McKee, owners of Headframe Spirits and Headframe Spirits Manufacturing in Butte, Montana. Michelle Huey, founder and owner of Vim & Vigor Compression Legwear in Missoula, Montana. Spencer Williams, CEO of West Paw Dog Toys in Bozeman, Montana. I'm grateful to all of them for taking the time to update our listeners during this period of uncertainty. We're talking with our guests by phone today. Production support for Can Do comes from the Dennis and Phyllis Washington Foundation, dedicated to investing in people to improve the quality of their lives, and from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans, and from Blackfoot, providing communication solutions for Montana businesses, plus opportunities like C2M Beta, an innovation lab aimed at helping startups thrive. C2MBeta.com. John and Courtney, welcome to the show today.
Thanks for having us, Arnie.
Thank you, my friend.
This is probably the only time, and hopefully the only time, I'm going to have to say this in my career, which is thank you for taking time away from the pandemic to tell me a little bit about what's happening with Headframe Spirits and maybe Butte, Montana in general. How are we holding up?
Well, Butte's amazing. Butte's doing a really great job staying home and, you know, taking care of one another and howling at 8 o'clock at night in support and appreciation of the folks who are keeping the wheels on. You know, we feel really fortunate at this point. I think we've been almost exactly 2 weeks without a new positive, which is pretty remarkable. And, you know, I think our hope in this moment is that we don't get complacent about that. That we treat that as a sign that we're doing things right.
And are you running the business from home now?
No, all of Team Headframe is actually still showing up at work. We've closed our tasting room and we've put a pause on producing spirits. We are all working out of our manufacturing facility and at three shifts a day on a really huge pivot to produce hand sanitizer at a really, really large scale.
How large a scale?
So we're doing 25,000 gallons a week.
And is that in response to demand, or is this because you feel, you know, a community obligation to join forces and pitch in?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. You know, the demand exists, and, you know, we see ourselves as sort of uniquely positioned to address that demand. Certainly at this sort of scale, there isn't anybody in a good radius of Headframe that has the capacity to do anything like this. So the demand exists, but this has also been really remarkable for our team as well. We've got a team of employees who are committed to coming to work and going home and minimal trips anywhere else, only for necessities and with masks and gloves, and not visiting friends and family. And, you know, our team is committed to serving those who are taking care of the rest of us. And there's a lot of gratitude on Team Headframe for being able to serve like this.
And have you been able to maintain your employee headcount?
So we've lost a couple of part-time bartenders who have full-time jobs and aren't able to pivot along with us. But we've actually replaced some of those part-timers with full-timers, folks in the community who have lost their primary job and are now able to help us, you know, first, second, and third shift. So we are actually, you know, our headcount and total number of hours in a week has actually increased.
And are you having any trouble getting inputs in order to produce the sanitizer?
You know, it hasn't been too bad. I mean, there certainly has been, you know, in the rush, we'll just say panic buying of toilet paper, that was sort of the upstream effect of what we saw now, whereas if you're in hand sanitizer right now, you need a few things that are very important to do it correctly to make it safe for people. And packaging for what you make hand sanitizer, you know, packaging hand sanitizer for lately, that has been difficult to get now too. And so we've been doing our best to stay on top of where things come from, how we can get what we're getting. But, you know, even today, I think we're packaging 10,000 100-mil bottles, and we've got 50-gallon drums that go out, and we have 5-gallon refillable buckets. So we have things that we try to service to the people who need it in the ways that they can best use it. But, you know, there have been plenty of people, like our local police station, they have been saving all of their old hand sanitizer bottles instead of throwing them out. And then they come pick up a 5-gallon bucket and refill what they've got because we very simply just don't have enough small packaging to help them make sure that everyone at their desk has what they need and all the police officers in their cars have what they need. So there has been some interesting like hiccups to how you keep that going. But so far, we've kept it going.
So it sounds like you're providing the sanitizer to a frontline healthcare and other public service personnel. Is it also available to the general public?
The answer to that is not really from us. You know, with the tasting room closed, we don't have a portal to the community. Our work so far really has been around taking care of the groups that take care of us. So, you know, the grocery store clerks, the taxi drivers, the FedEx, UPS, and USPS workers, first responders, nurses, doctors, hospitals, patients in clinics and hospitals. You know, I think in a couple or few weeks, if we feel like we've got a good handle on that and we can find a sufficient volume of that smaller sort of last mile package, we might look at how best we get into distribution for that market. But right now, we're keeping our hands really full, just taking care of essential personnel, primarily inside Montana, but some outside as well.
Your primary business, which is producing spirits, basically had, besides your tasting room, two audiences. You have it liquor stores where your product is sold and restaurants. Under the new normal that might emerge out of this, how do you think it will affect your business model?
Well, I think that's a really interesting question. I'll tell you, you know, right now, in this moment, I think our first goal when all of this has passed and we wind up in our new normal is we want to hug and kiss absolutely everybody. And
that includes you, Arnie.
That includes you, Arnie. And once that first rush of enthusiasm passes, I think that a lot of what we're going to continue to do is going to settle into a new norm that probably looks a little bit different than the current norm. I think that we'll probably be a little more cautious about tastings and serving and hand washing. But I think a lot of that beautiful social nature of the work that we do is the thing that we crave and that we're all missing and that's going to feel like a return to a new version of a normal.
Are you still providing, I know you stopped production, but you have some inventory and liquor stores are still open. Are you still supplying to your retail outlets?
Yeah, we are, Ernie. We actually, going into the new year, decided to package ahead quite a bit. And by I mean by quite a bit, enough spirits to get us through till May in order to make sure that we could concentrate on making spirits. And so we sort of do things in these waves in our business. So just incidentally and happenstance and luckily, we have everything packaged out to basically the start of June. And so as people are calling for inventory replenish both at the state and out of state, we just go grab it off the shelf and put it on a truck and hit send. And what's been really great about that is we haven't had to re-engage our packaging lines. We haven't had to re-engage our people and open up potential sources of reinfection for everybody. We've been able to sort of pull from this product that was packaged, you know, in 2019 and know that we're sending out something safe.
Sounded like a very good fortuitous planning and thinking ahead approach to your business. What advice might you have for folks who are listening in who are unsure about what they ought to be doing right now in the midst of all of this? And what kind of advice might you have for them?
Well, I think that John and I will probably have a couple things to share. You know, the first one I want to go back to is Headframe actually was founded as a result of the last recession, and the company that John was working for went bankrupt. John lost his job. John was on unemployment for 18 months while we built the business plan, got the financing, and ultimately were able to launch Headframe Spirits. If we keep our eyes just at what's immediately in front of us, this is really scary for business owners, for employees of businesses, small and large. I think the thing that's important to bear in mind is it's just a degree of optimism that, you know, even in these really difficult moments, the opportunity to find a way to pivot or to create something new out of a challenge or a failure is an important perspective to keep in mind. I recognize that not all businesses will come through this. I encourage, you know, all of us to be looking for the resources to help us figure out how to sustain, you know, whether that's SBA or, you know, work with your local lender or with folks in your community or a pivot that you can do as a business. But, you know, more than that, I'm excited for what comes out on the other side and how we learn to reimagine all of ourselves to be a little more pandemic resistant and, you know, of value to one another.
Courtney, John, thank you for sharing that with us today. Good luck on moving forward, and you certainly show a lot of resilience, passion, and positive attitude, which I think we all need at this time.
Hey, we are all in this together, and we're so grateful for such a remarkable community to get to share it all with.
And thank you, Arnie. I want to add one thing. A friend of mine told me this before everything got shut down. So we were coming into the first real scary part of this before the state got shut down. And this friend of ours now, he lost his job, and he now works for us here. He's one of the people we've hired to sort of help us get through this time. And he shared this thing that I would like to sort of paraphrase, and I sure I won't say as beautifully as he did, but he said, you know, all of us right now, we're this tribe, and we've been pushed into the back of this cave. And it's dark in the back of the cave, but whatever's outside right now is more scary. And so we've all retreated back into this cave, and we're all standing there wondering how we're going to get out. And someone lights a fire, and they start pushing back on that darkness. And then someone adds a little fuel to that fire and pushes back on that darkness a little more. And eventually what happens is the fire is so bright, there's no reason for us not to step back out of that cave. And that's what we're all doing right now, is we all need to understand that there's plenty of us out there right now that are adding a little fuel to that fire, and we're all pushing that darkness back together, and we're all going to come out of the cave and back out into the light together.
Hopefully it's well stocked with Headframe Spirits. And again, thank you both for joining us today.
Well, thank you, Arnie. And stay safe. Keep your hands clean. Keep your microphones clean. And take good care. We can't wait to see you on the other side of all of this.
Me as well. Take care. My next guest is Michelle Huey, founder and owner of Vim & Vigor Compression Legwear in Missoula, Montana. Michelle Huey, thank you for joining me today on the show.
Hi, Arnie. How's it going?
It's going pretty good. Are you running Vim & Vigor from your house now?
Yeah, we are all pretty much working remote. We have one person in fulfillment is still packing up and shipping out socks, but predominantly everyone's working from home. But we still, you know, as a distribution center in Missoula, we still are shipping out product out.
A lot of your business is retail.
Yeah.
And the retail segment has shut down for all practical purposes. The online business, I assume, is still continuing. How has that affected your day-to-day operation?
Retail was about 50, 55% of our overall revenues coming into the COVID-19 situation. And so that's had a huge effect on our overall business. Luckily, we still have a really strong online presence, and that's really keeping us afloat right now. But we had to make some pretty substantial changes to our staff because most of our revenue were coming from brick-and-mortar stores, which are pretty much all closed across the country.
So like many businesses, I understand 70% of small businesses across the country have applied for government loans or grants related to payroll and others. Have you done that as well?
I have, yeah. I was early on in any of those types of loans. So I just got word early this week that I am going to receive an SBA loan with a Paycheck Protection loan. So that's going to be great. Not sure when exactly I'm going to be getting the funds, but hopefully soon. And excited to learn more about it. It's, so far, some of the information on that's been pretty vague. I think they're still trying to figure it out. But we did get a PPP, Paycheck Protection loan, which is going to be really helpful.
For our listeners, the Payroll Protection Plan loan is a loan that is to be used to supplement payroll. 75% of that loan goes to payroll. The rest can go for some overhead. And if you do use that in the way it was envisioned, it converts to a sort of a grant. So it goes from a loan to actually almost like a government investment. And
right.
I think most people are paying close attention so that they don't have to repay it. Even if it stays as a loan, I think the interest rate on a two-year loan is 1%. So it's a pretty good resource for small businesses. And obviously, you jumped on it early.
Yeah, and the challenge with that, especially with the loan forgiveness component, the challenge of that is timing, right? You know, so if the entire country is closed down, I mean, I would love to bring everyone back, but that also is with the assumption that there's enough work to be done as well. And so it's really striking that balance of making sure that the demand is there and business is kind of picking up again with bringing some of our staff back. So it'll be really interesting to see what they do from a timing standpoint.
Well, what's interesting about bringing staff back, and I've had this conversation with other businesses, the whole model has changed. For example, with schools being closed, some workers can't afford, you know, with their kids home now for daycare. They were planning to have their kids in school, you know, 7 or 8 hours a day, and that has changed, and so that has an effect. Does that affect any of your employees?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I mean, even if some people wanted to come back to work, it's very challenging. I mean, we have some single moms, some single dads, you know, and that could be really difficult. And so that's just adds another level of complexity with everything.
You have another unique aspect of your business, which is your compression hose are an important component for people who are on their feet a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And EMTs and nurses and people in fulfillment centers who are now working, you know, 14, 16, 18-hour shifts.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen a demand from that sector, and how are you responding to that?
Yeah, I think there are several things. What's really interesting is we have seen an increase in our online business, you know, and I think obviously a lot of stores are closed and people are home more, and they're starting to shop online. But also our biggest advocates and customer base are people in the healthcare community, and they're the ones who really need the compression socks the most, especially during this time. Early on when the virus really hit, we had some hospital systems reach out to us saying, hey, is there any way you can provide some free pairs for our emergency room or ICU? And so we did that initially, but as a small business, we weren't able to really just continue to give out free socks. And so one thing we said to each other, okay, what are ways that we can help the medical community? And we said to ourselves, well, we don't have money, but we certainly have a lot of socks sitting there. Maybe we could do kind of a buy one, give one program. And so at the end of March, we launched a buy one, give one promotion. For every sock purchase on our website, we're also giving a free pair of compression socks to healthcare providers on the front line. As of now, we have probably over about 225 hospital systems reach out to us, and we've had requests for close to 10,000 pairs of socks. And so every week we have been just sending out socks, and I think a lot of people have been responding really positively to that. So that's been really rewarding.
Now, Vim and Vigor wasn't open during the 2008 economic downturn, but your family running Carvel ice cream store in New York was in business at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So based on that experience and what you're seeing now, what kind of advice might you have for other small businesses out there who are trying to figure out what their new normal is?
You know, I was thinking about this. You know, you're always trying to see the silver lining with such a crappy situation. And there are a few things that have come to me that are huge lessons learned, whether I have been doing it or things to make sure I'm going to do moving forward. I think the first thing is really paying attention to your finances. And I was on a very high level, but this whole experience has made me really dig into my finances on a really nitty-gritty level to really figure out where every penny is being spent And am I seeing, you know, a proper return on the money that I'm putting into the business, right? And so that's like number one, first and foremost, because you can get complacent, you know, like one thing leads into another and you can say, oh, let's buy that extra app. That's fine. It's not a big deal if you go on this trip without really paying enough attention, especially when things are going well. You don't really question it as much. And this has really forced me to really dig into our finances. I think the second thing is diversifying your revenue channels. If we didn't have an online presence, we would be done as a business. And I have friends in the industry where 80% of the revenue, 90% of the revenue were brick and mortar stores. And so they are really affected by this to a point where they're actually temporarily closing down. They just said, there's nothing I can do. It's too late for me to establish a new revenue channel now. And so they pretty much had to close down and they're waiting it out. And so I think that those are the two components from just like a lessons learned standpoint of things that I wasn't doing and things that luckily we were doing that's saving our butt just a little bit.
You allude to something very important, how people who are relying on brick and mortars are suffering when you have a situation like Amazon hiring 100,000 new employees and their stock hitting an all-time high during a pandemic. So, I mean, it's it is a little bit change in the model. And you're paying attention to cash, I think, is extremely important. Most of the people that I respect in the financial world say the number one thing a small business can do in a time like this is conserve cash. You have to be able to hunker down and survive this.
Right.
If the business shut down, it doesn't do any good for employees, for you, for anybody else. So I think that's really an important, you know, realization to come to, and it seems like you have come to that. What do you think the business is going to look like? Is it going to change at all after this is all over, do you think?
Oh my gosh, I don't know. I mean, I think so much is going to depend on how long this lasts for. I still think that there's a strong place for brick and mortar stores. But as you know, it's a lot of larger brick and mortar stores have been on the decline, a sharp, steady decline over the past 2 or 3 years. And for a lot of them, they're kind of the nail on the coffin. I think it's going to really force brick and mortar stores to really figure out who their community is and really kind of reinvent themselves, I think, to be successful. Because right now, this whole pandemic has really forced people who don't really like to shop online to become a lot more comfortable shopping online, right? So inherently, it's accelerated the move to a more kind of digital e-commerce platform for so many people in the United States and really the world, right? I think it's going to be really interesting to see the change from an employment standpoint. I think people are going to be a lot more careful on how many employees that they bring in. And I think people are going to start using a lot more technology from an efficiency standpoint in place of bringing in employees. And I think that that's something you're going to see across the board in every industry.
Well, I think you're a manufacturer.
Right.
So you have to have a facility in which
to have a facility. I have to have people, and I will continue to have people. But I think for other businesses where, you know, they just kind of relied more heavily on personnel, that's where you're going to see a change.
This has been very helpful. It's very good to catch up with you. Good luck on surviving all this in the best way possible. And we'll catch up with you again in the near future.
Sounds great. Thanks, Arnie.
Hey, thank you, Michelle. Production support for CanDo comes from the Dennis and Phyllis Washington Foundation, dedicated to investing in people to improve the quality of their lives, and from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans, and from Blackfoot, providing communication solutions for Montana businesses, plus opportunities like C2M Beta, an innovation lab aimed at helping startups thrive. C2MBeta.com. My next guest is Spencer Williams, CEO of Westpaw Dog Toys in Bozeman, Montana. Spencer, thank you for joining me today.
You're welcome, Arnie. It's good to be with you.
How are things in Bozeman and Gallatin County?
Well, in Bozeman and Gallatin County, we have seen a large number of COVID cases relative to the rest of the state. And I've also been really impressed with our local health department, making certain that they put in restrictions early to keep people safe, and pleased with the state's response as well. So overall, it is a very quiet town, but things are still limping along, I would say.
How has it affected your workforce at Westpaw?
Well, it's been interesting to see how much uncertainty there was initially. I'm thinking back about 3 or 4 weeks ago now as to, is it safe to go into work and are we deemed an essential business and how does that affect our workforce? And what we've seen is that because we were suppliers to grocery, pet stores, and hardware, all three of which are essential businesses, that we were asked to keep operating. We were able to get state support to be a deemed essential business to supply those. And so we've been able to keep our factory and our people employed, which has been wonderful. But what we really had to notice was that we have to be really consistent and, in fact, very proactive with our communications. And so I sent out an email to the staff twice a week, same day, same time, each week, and make sure that people are up to speed on what the regulations are and what we're doing to keep them safe and to keep our doors open. And I've gotten a lot of positive feedback from our staff on that because there is so much uncertainty, Arnie, in these times. And we're trying to be really factual and grounded, but also positive and encouraging our people to keep looking forward towards more growth in the future.
So the state deemed you an essential business. How did that come about?
Well, we were doing a couple of things that made Westpaw unique. And the first was that we had started to shift our sewing manufacturing over to producing masks for our local hospital here in Bozeman, Bozeman Health. And then the second thing is that we had letters from the CEO of Ace Hardware, grocery stores, and pet stores, both domestically and overseas, all deeming us, in their point of view, as an essential supplier to their essential businesses. So we provided that documentation to the state and asked that they consider us in part or whole an essential business and got a letter back saying that they agreed with that. And what we did is gave each of our employees a written letter from me to make certain that they had that with them in the car. If they ever were asked why they were commuting to work, they could produce that documentation.
Did Westpaw apply for any of the CARES Act funds?
Yes, we did. We applied for the Payroll Protection Program through the SBA, and we were grateful to our local bank, First Security Bank, which is part of Glacier Corp. They worked through the weekend to get applications in, and we were awarded funds for that.
There's been a huge amount of response to the availability of aid from Montana businesses. I would say every small business that I've spoken with in the last several weeks have applied. There's no exception to that. So I'm sure that's being mimicked around the rest of the country as well.
It is. You know, when I look at our business, again, we are thankful that we can still supply businesses that are largely open. But we all know that there are less people going into pet shops. They might be driving by for curbside pickup, but they're really just getting the essentials, and dog toys, leashes, and collars, and beds don't really fall into the everyday thinking when it comes to a pandemic like we're in. And so we have seen a huge drop in our sales in the end of March and in early April. And so we're really adjusting to that very quickly. And we think that the Paycheck Protection Program will be instrumental in helping us survive these next couple months.
The other manufacturers that we have spoken with on this show have pivoted to offer certain kinds of production that they hadn't in the past. Have you pivoted as well?
Absolutely. You know, I think one of the beauties of being entrepreneurial and family owned is that we can pivot really quickly as a company to sustain jobs and create new sources of revenue and keep people employed. We started in partnership with Mystery Ranch here in Bozeman and a nonprofit that started up called Masks for Heroes. And we started making sewn cloth masks for Bozeman Health, and we've been donating thousands of them for the last 3 weeks to make certain that the medical professionals in our hospital system here have the masks that they need. And so it's been an incredible partnership, and so that's been really, really helpful, like you said, to keep people employed, but to make certain that our frontline healthcare workers have the proper protective equipment that they need.
And that's really important since Gallatin County is the Montana hotspot among the 56 counties.
It is. You know, it's really fun, Arnie, and Montana is such a kind of a big town with really long streets, and we all kind of know each other, helping each other out. There's a lot of collaboration around ideas of how to make these kind of products and sharing it out widely with people and taking in donated textiles and learning patterns and helping people get these masks to the frontline workers. It is an awesome community effort and one that I'm just so proud that our teams can be a part of. And I would say that, you know, we're also learning a lot about it. And we've had so many requests for masks that we're actually, again, taking even more of our factory, training more of our staff to make masks, and we'll have production capability starting next week that will exceed what's needed by our hospital. And as you were saying, you know, what strategies are we doing to pivot? One of our strategies is that with that extra production capacity, we're going to begin selling masks on our website to help generate some more revenue for the company and to continue to allow us to donate the mask to healthcare professionals. And so that nimbleness on our team is something that I'm just super impressed with. And we want to make sure our masks are available nationwide to people by our website at westpaw.com. And that'll happen next week.
And so you'll be adopting somewhat of a buy one, donate one kind of a program?
We really are donating really just the labor portion of the mask to the hospitals now. And so in all transparency, we're just a small part of that donation piece. Mystery Ranch is donating time and materials, as well as a Mask for Heroes, which has a GoFundMe site that people are supporting. So we're really not claiming it as one mask is or just one that's given, because it's a little bit more complicated than that. But we're certainly going to make sure people know that when they buy our masks, it helps us fund the labor that goes into building the mask for the hospital workers.
Are you running the company from home?
You know, I get to work at home 3 days a week. I get to go into the factory 2 days a week. But my company doesn't require me to run it. I have amazing staff working from their homes, in the factory, in the offices at the factory, that make sure that the company keeps running. I'm just so proud of my team in this disruption, that they can keep going. And nobody's calling on me to call the shot. We have a really engaged workforce, Arnie, and to see them thrive in this challenging time is just something I will never, ever forget.
There's a tremendous amount of speculation of at the end of this that there will be some sort of new retail normal, a new normal for retail businesses. I've heard that, you know, 40% of restaurants may close nationwide permanently. Some people are projecting or predicting that it's the demise of department stores around the world even. Have you thought about what your business will look like in the future?
Thankfully, Westpaw is really diversified in who we sell to, Arnie. And so we get to see the e-commerce platforms like Amazon and Chewy's.com. We get to see the bigger box stores, the chains of retail in pet, and even Target. And we also get to see the independents throughout the country who we supply. And being in over 6,000 retailers, we get a pretty good perspective. I truly believe that what consumers are going to be looking for in the new world is what they actually have been looking for. They're looking for a unique experience. And whether for them that experience is ordering something and having it delivered to their home, whether that's food or a cooked meal or a pet supply, they want maybe that ultimate convenience is what they're after right then and there. But we also know that when retail can provide an experience that is one of connection for the consumer, for instance, when somebody can go into the pet shop and get advice on products or nutrition, there's that connection that is there. They'll be willing to still do that shopping in person, because people will come out of this longing for personal connection. So I do believe that there's going to be a shift in how retailers operate. And I think what it's going to be, Arnie, is that a lot of our retailers are going to be even more accommodating and even maybe prefer people swinging by to pick up goods at the curb or delivering it to their home free of cost, because they've had to learn how to compete with online. I think that'll make our retailers even more competitive. But it is going to be a shifting landscape. And those retailers that can do those personalized services as well as create an in-store connection will thrive and survive, but it will forever change. This is such a big disruption.
It's almost like the way it used to be in the good old days when you had a personal relationship with your retailers in Montana. I mean, we still have maintained that pretty much, but in other parts around the United States, it's become very impersonal. And this may result in the retail sector becoming more customer-oriented than they have ever been in the recent history.
I think you're right. And I think where we've seen the big boxes like Target and Walmart perform differently and actually meet expectations of the consumer that weren't really noticed or possible before is like their own version of curbside pickup, right? And they were able to leverage their app and create parking spaces for the customers. And that was already in process so they can compete with the likes of Amazon. What I've noticed is they're doing that even better than they thought they could. Here's where I'm really excited, though, is our local Ace Hardware is owned by a local family, and they have now two parking spots in their lot that say for pickup. So they are reacting within 3 weeks what the big box companies like Target and Walmart took 3 years to do. And now they're providing that service where somebody can pull up and have their Ace order delivered right to their door of their car. This kind of innovation, and even as you're saying, Arnie, that personal connection is what's going to really differentiate retail in 2021.
Spencer, you've spent almost your whole life, your adult life, at Westpaw. So you've gone through ups and downs before. You were there during the 2008 economic downturn. What advice would you give to Montana businessmen and women who maybe have been in business since 2008 and haven't experienced the roller coaster effect and the traumatic effect on a business that results from a downturn? This downturn has elements to it that we've never seen before, but businesses that have gone through some of the ones that we have experienced have learned a lesson from that. What lesson would you share?
Couple points, Arnie, that I've learned, and from others I've experienced this advice, is when going into this kind of a downturn, it is my advice that somebody look closely at their cash to make certain that they can have a clear line of sight to what's going to keep the business operating, and then make the necessary cuts deeper and farther lasting than they think they'll need to survive. And then secondly, to make certain to make the investments in new product, new marketing, new services, and innovation so that they can launch those things now and steepen the uphill curve as they come out of a recession. Those two things, saving costs and preserving cash and investing in innovation and new product and services, really have helped Westpaw survive these recessions that we've been through. And I'll give you an example. We have been working for 3 years on a new product line, and we have that line ready to launch in June. Part of that line is ready now. And what we decided to do in very short order was to pull that launch forward so we can launch it right now. Why? We need the additional revenue for sure. But customers, retailers, consumers, they want new products and services to get people back into the stores, to get people excited. And as we come out of this, new is really important. And so we're going to come out with a new product line starting May 1st, and people are going to be really excited about it. So that's worked for us in the past, and that's my advice for businesses to survive a major downturn like this.
Spencer, I'm looking forward to seeing your new product line. Thank you for joining us today, and we wish you well during the coming months ahead.
Thank you, Arnie. All my best to you as well.
I appreciate your listening to Can Do, Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, produced by Peter Hoag and Beth Ann Austin in association with Montana Public Radio. For comments, recommendations for future guests, or general information, please go to mtpr.org. There you can also find previous guests' contact information and content from all our shows. Join us next time for part two of our conversation with Montana entrepreneurs about how they are adapting their business to cope with the current global health crisis. I'm Arnie Sherman, wishing you peace and prosperity.